Good morning, people of podcast world, or good afternoon, or good evening, whatever's appropriate. This is Zach, and you're listening to Explains on the Bitcoin Well podcast channel. As I record this on Monday, March 9th, we are coming out of a weekend filled with tensions in the Middle East and trade wars between America and Canada. I'm filled with the cliche but incredibly true feeling that we have so much more in common with every citizen of every country and so little in common with the rulers imposing these wars and conflicts. If only we had some sort of neutral source of truth and a way to trade with each other that didn't require these bureaucrats and warmongers. Oh wait, we totally do. And now is a great time to relax into some knowledge and learn how exactly does Bitcoin work anyway. Today we'll be getting into the nitty-gritty about transactions and the time chain, or blockchain as you may have heard it called, as well as lesser known part of Bitcoin, UTXOs. So stick around if you want to grow your mind and not increase your stress level, as so much of the media is trying to do to you. As always, I request you email any questions or feedback to me at z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. And without further ado, let's begin how Bitcoin actually works, transactions, and the blockchain. Let me start by destroying a mental model most people carry around without even realizing it. When people hear Bitcoin wallet, they picture something like a digital safe or a vault, a little encrypted box on your phone with coins rattling around inside, maybe a USB drive with files named mybitcoin.btc or something like that. But the term wallet is really metaphorical, and that's not really how Bitcoin works. So here's the reality. Your Bitcoin don't exist as files. They don't live anywhere. There are no coins being stored on your hardware wallet, no coins being transferred when you send a transaction. What exists, the only thing that exists, is the ledger, a global distributed public ledger, a record of every single transaction that has ever happened on the Bitcoin network, going all the way back to the Genesis block in January of 2009. And owning Bitcoin? That's not really the right word either. What you actually own is a key, a unique mathematical key that gives you, and only you, the ability to authorize the movement of a specific entry on that ledger. That's it. That's Bitcoin ownership. You're not holding coins, you're holding permission. Cryptographic, mathematical, unfakeable permission. The moment that clicks, really clicks, the whole system starts making a different kind of sense. Okay, now let's talk about how a transaction actually works, because this is where most explanations go sideways. Your bank account has a balance. It's just a number. You have $500, you spend $50, the number drops to $450. Simple arithmetic. The underlying mechanics are invisible to you, and the bank handles all of that behind the curtain. Bitcoin doesn't work like that. Bitcoin uses something called UTXOs, or unspent transaction outputs. Yes, it's a mouthful, but stick with me. The easiest way to understand UTXOs is to stop thinking about a bank account and start thinking about cash, physical bills. Say you have 5 Bitcoin bill, and you want to spend 1 Bitcoin to a friend. In the legacy banking world, you just deduct 1 from your balance. Easy. In Bitcoin, you can't break a UTXO. You have to spend the whole thing. So here's what actually happens. You spend the entire 5 Bitcoin bill. 1 Bitcoin goes to your friend. 4 Bitcoin comes back to you as a brand new bill, a new UTXO, your change. Every Bitcoin transaction is the destruction of old UTXOs and the creation of new ones. The ledger is just a permanent record of every one of those events, chained together since day one. Now, how does the network know you authorized that transaction? How does it know someone didn't just fake it? Your private key. When you send Bitcoin, your wallet uses your private key to create a unique mathematical signature on that specific transaction. Not a reusable password, not a PIN code, a signature that is mathematically unique to this transaction with these inputs at this moment. Impossible to fake, impossible to reuse. And here's the elegant part. The network can verify that signature is valid without ever seeing the private key. The math works in one direction. You prove that you authorized it without revealing the secret itself. This is why the saying, "not your keys, not your coins," isn't just a bumper sticker. Your private key is the only thing standing between your Bitcoin and the void. There's no customer service number to call, no password reset email. The math is the final word. So you've created a transaction. You've signed it with your private key. Now what? Your wallet broadcasts it to the network. And here's where I want to paint a picture for anyone who was online in the early 2000s. You remember LimeWire, BitTorrent, the old peer-to-peer file sharing networks where people would share music and movies and pictures? There was no central server. There was no computer that held all the music. Instead, thousands of users' computers were all connected to each other, seeding files back and forth. If you downloaded a song, you automatically started helping distribute it to other people. The more people had the file, the more unstoppable it became. Bitcoin's network works the exact same way. When your wallet broadcasts a transaction, it doesn't send it to a Bitcoin headquarters. It sends it to a few nearby nodes. Those nodes verify that it's valid, check the signature, check that the UTXOs being spent actually exist, and then they pass it on to their neighboring node, and so on. Within seconds, your transaction is propagating across thousands of independent computers all over the world. No central server, no single point of control, no person that can be threatened. But at this point, your transaction is not confirmed yet, meaning it's not yet cemented in the blockchain. Your transaction lands in something called the mempool, the memory pool. Think of it as a waiting room. A holding area where valid, unconfirmed transactions sit and wait to be picked up. Satoshi built in a free market mechanism where miners pick transactions out of the mempool based on the fees attached. Higher fee? You jump the queue. Congestion on the network? The fee market heats up. Quiet day? You can move Bitcoin for fractions of a cent. It's a free market for block space. No bureaucrat setting the price, supply and demand operating in real time. Here's something the legacy financial system doesn't want you thinking about too hard. When you wire money through a bank, the fee scales with the amount. Moving $100, small fee. Moving $100,000, bigger fee. Moving $10 million, now you're having conversations with compliance officers, and the fee is a meaningful percentage of the transaction. The implicit message, large movements of wealth require permission, and permission has a price. Bitcoin fees don't work like that at all. Fees on the Bitcoin network are priced by the size of the data, measured in Satoshis per byte, not Satoshis per dollar. Not a percentage of value. The amount being sent is completely irrelevant to the fee. So what does affect the cost? The complexity of the transaction. Remember those UTXOs? Think of them like physical coins. If you are sweeping up 50 tiny UTXOs from 50 different past transactions to make one payment, like paying for a coffee with a bucket of pennies, that takes up more data and space on the ledger. It's heavier data-wise. That costs more. But if you're moving one single massive UTXO, that's light. That's cheap. What that means in practice, sending $500 and sending 500 million can cost exactly the same if the data size is the same. The network charges for the bytes, not the wealth. Think about how radical that is. A Salvadorian worker sending $20 home to his family pays the same fee as a hedge fund settling an eight-figure position. There's no large transaction surcharge, no wealth-based pricing, no gatekeeper deciding your transaction is too big and needs extra scrutiny. And those fees? They don't go to a company. They go to the miners who do the work of building the blocks. A market-driven reward that keeps the network honest with no corporate intermediary taking a cut. That's not just a technical detail. That's a moral statement about who the financial system is supposed to serve. Let me break this down because this is the part most people think they understand and most people kind of miss. A block is just a page in the ledger. It contains a batch of transactions pulled from the mempool, a timestamp, and some other technical metadata. Here's the part that makes the whole structure immutable. Every block contains a hash, a cryptographic fingerprint, a unique string of characters generated from all of the data inside that block. Change anything in the block, even a single character, and the hash changes completely, like a fingerprint that shatters if you try to duplicate it. Now here's the key. Every block also contains the hash of the block before it. Imagine each block as a document sealed with hot wax. Then the next block is created. The miner doesn't just stamp it with fresh wax. They have to press the seal of the previous block into the new wax first. The new seal contains the imprint of the old one. So every block is cryptographically fused to every block before it, all the way back to the Genesis block. I think about what that means for tampering. Say someone wanted to go back and alter a transaction from 3 years ago to change who received those funds. They'd have to change that block, but changing that block changes its hash. Now the next block's embedded hash no longer matches, so that block is broken too, and the one after that, and the one after that. To successfully rewrite history, you'd have to redo the cryptographic block from your target block all the way to the present and outpace the entire honest network doing it in real time. We talked about those odds in the last video, the gambler's ruin. The probability collapses to essentially zero within just a few confirmations. Tampering isn't just difficult, it's physically, mathematically, economically insane. So when is a transaction final? The rule of thumb, about six confirmations. Six blocks mined on top of yours, that's roughly 1 hour. At that point, the computational work required to reverse your transaction exceeds the output of a small nation's power grid. No hacker has that. No government has that, at least not deployed against a single transaction. The math has spoken. The transaction is done. Let me put that in contrast with the legacy system. Your bank can reverse a transaction, period, full stop. Your account can be frozen. Your funds can be seized, held, restricted, or confiscated with a phone call, a court order, or sometimes just a compliance algorithm that flagged your name. Your wealth in the legacy system is not yours. It's a balance the bank permits you to access under conditions they set, subject to rules that change without your consent. Bitcoin operates on a different principle entirely. Once a transaction is confirmed on the Bitcoin network, it is not a bank's decision. It's not a government decision. It is a law of physics. No one at Bitcoin headquarters can reverse it because there is no Bitcoin headquarters. No CEO can be pressured into freezing your account because there is no CEO. The network is thousands of independent nodes all over the world, each running the same open source code, each verifying the same rules. You didn't need a permit to download a song in 2004. You don't need a permit to move your wealth in 2026. The legacy financial system treats your money like a privilege it can revoke. Bitcoin treats your wealth like a mathematical fact. This isn't a database with better security, it's a mathematical fortress built from cryptographic proof, aligned incentives, and distributed trust. Every block added to the chain is another brick in the wall. The signal is unblockable, unstoppable code. We've covered the what a transaction is, how it moves, how it gets recorded, but we haven't talked about who actually does the work of building those blocks and why they bother. That's mining, and it's the most misunderstood piece of the entire system. Next video, we're going inside the mines. We're going to talk about what miners actually do, why proof of work is the most brilliant incentive structure ever designed, and why the energy conversation around Bitcoin gets almost everything wrong. I'll see you there.